a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Morning. Welcome, everybody, to the second edition of House State Affairs. I'd have the secretary call the roll for determination of quorum.
Representatives Bartling.
Here.
Boland.
Here.
Hager.
Here.
Hawley.
Here.
Langer.
Here.
Mickelson.
Here.
Munsterman.
Here.
Solem.
Here.
Stevens.
Here.
Virchio.
Here.
Wink.
Here.
Westra.
Here.
Gosh.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Quorum is present. I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes. Moved by Representative Mickelson, seconded by Representative Westra. All those in favor of approving the minutes will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Minutes are approved. If you plan on testifying today, please sign at the podium in the back. Please turn your cell phones off or on silent. Our agenda contains two bills this morning. House Bill 1051 will be our first bill. This is an act to revise various trust and trust company provisions. And at this time, we will take proponent testimony for House Bill 1051.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brett Aftal, the Director of the Division of Banking, here in support of House Bill 1051. House Bill 1051 is the annual work product of the Governor's Trust Task Force. It's a collective of industry practitioners, government, and the regulatory body. There's 20 members on the task force. It's currently chaired by yours, a member of this panel, Representative Mickelson. Previously was chaired by Representative Lust for the last several years. As is typically the case, the bill is rather lengthy, and we're not here today to go through section by section on that. A lot of cleanup in the bill, quite pretty technical type changes, but what I'd like to do is just give a little update on where we're at in the trust company space, and then the first eight sections of the bill deal with trust company regulations, so I'll walk through a few of those where there are substantive changes, and then there's at least one other proponent for the bill that will address the trust specific areas. The trust company industry is definitely a growing industry in our state. We have 76 trust companies chartered in South Dakota. And as of the end of 2013, they were at $148 billion in assets. I don't have the 2014 numbers. Those reports are due by the end of this month, so about the middle of February we'll have those numbers. But along with the assets, there is a fairly decent employment. It's starting to catch up. It's taken a while to gain some momentum, but inside those trust companies, we're at about 122 full-time equivalents. It's not a big numbers game, but it's pretty good employment. Most of that is centered in the Sioux Falls area, but there's also a presence in right here in Pierre, out in Rapid City, and some in Aberdeen and a few other areas. These companies pay some franchise tax. That number is going up. And for fiscal year 2014, those trust companies paid just short of $1.7 million in franchise tax. And that's creeping up. FY13, they're at $1.2 million. I expect that to continue to increase because that tax is tiered in over the first 5 years of their operations. There's a mandatory minimum for each year after that. So, with that, I'll jump into the bill. Like I said, the first eight sections deal with the trust companies, so that's kind of where we operate as the Division of Banking. Sections 1 and 2 just delete some unnecessary language. Section 3 clarifies a provision in there. There's a requirement that on the public trust companies, their board needs to come to South Dakota and be physically present to have two meetings a year in the state. And we'd use the term quorum, thinking that was clear enough, but that term is defined in the corporate code but not in the LLC code, so we just inserted majority in there to make that even more clear. Section 4 deletes some transition language no longer necessary. Section 5 deals with the pledge that trust companies make to our office. For the unlikely event of a failure of a trust company, they make a cash pledge to our office to cover costs associated with resolving that company. And there's criteria or limitations on what that pledge can be invested in, and this provision just simply expands that a little bit to allow them to invest in municipal securities in South Dakota. Section 6 just addresses a misspelling. Section 7, there's a provision, there's strict confidentiality in this chapter, as you'd expect, but the division is allowed to share information with other regulators dealing with enforcement actions if we take an action against a company. And the change in Section 7 would simply allow us to share similar type information if we take action to remove an individual from the industry. So it's a pretty rare event. It'd be under pretty extreme circumstances, but we would be able to share that with other state regulators or other federal regulators if they would need to know that information. And then Section 8 would be a new provision in Chapter 51A6A, and would be similar to a provision we have in the bank code. If a trust company sells all of its assets and someone assumes all of its liabilities, they would then be required within 30 days to dissolve their charter. And this is simply to reinforce the idea that that charter that we grant them is not a separate asset of the company. It's simply something we grant to them to execute a specific business plan by a specific group of people. If they sell the assets of the company, the charter is to be dissolved, and anybody else that wants a charter, they can go ahead and apply for one. We have a pretty efficient process to handle that. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will ask for your support of House Bill 1051 and stand by for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ofdahl. Further proponent testimony? Also a returning member to this bill, Mr. Getzinger. Welcome.
Thank you, Leader Gosch. My name is Pat Getzinger. I'm an attorney in Rapid City, South Dakota with the law firm of Gunderson, Palmer, Nelson, and Ashmore. I've been a member of the Governor's Trust Task Force since its inception in 1997. It's been my annual pleasure to come before the legislature and visit with you about the details of the annual Trust Task Force bill. And try to keep it light, try to keep it in a general overview fashion, but address any questions that the members might have. I do appreciate the fact that we have new members on this committee. We've had some turnover on the leadership, some might say for the better, Representative Gosch. It's good to see it stay in the West River. I do acknowledge that our chair of the task force is Representative Mark Mickelson, who took over for Representative Lust.
I do hope Representative Lust is listening in this morning.
I can bet you he is, so we'll watch his Twitter feed to see what he says about this. But we're happy to have Representative Mickelson step in and continue to chair the Governor's Trust Task Force, and I might note for those historians in the audience that all roads to the governor's chair lead through the trust task force chairmanship, because Governor Dugard was our co-chair for 8 years prior to him ascending to the chair of governor. So mark that off on your list, Representative Mickelson. details that Director Aftal went into, I'm going to pick up and talk about some that relate to the practice of trust practice in South Dakota. But before doing that, I want to share with you a few stories that have come about as a result of the growth of the trust industry in South Dakota. And it's a national and international growth that's occurring as a result of what South Dakota offers to families and individuals and trust companies wanting to do business in South Dakota. I had the pleasure of just coming back from the Heckerling Institute in Orlando, Florida, which is the premier estate planning, trust and estate planning program, series of programs held in Orlando over a week long period earlier in January. South Dakota hosted the third annual South Dakota Advantage event at the Heckerling Institute. The first year that we hosted this event to extol the virtues of South Dakota as a trust location, we attracted 50 people and thought that was a rousing success. Last year, we attracted over 100 people to the reception and thought that was a rousing success. This year, we had over 170 people in attendance at that reception, and we attribute that to the fact that we advertised Governor Dugard as being available to make remarks through a videotaped message that he gave. And that message resonated because Governor Dugard does have a background in the trust industry as a former trust officer and as the former chair, co-chair of the trust task force. And in talking to various trust companies and individuals that choose to do business in South Dakota, one of the things that they attribute it to is not only its great working environment, great business environment, tax environment, lack of tax environment, firm but fair regulatory environment, but they also attribute it to the fact that we do have a governor's trust task force that works arm in arm with the industry, the regulators, the administration, the legislature, to assure the health of the trust industry in South Dakota. And Director Zafdahl's numbers point out the success that we've achieved across the board in that area. We lead the nation in the number of private and public state chartered trust companies. The assets under management in those trust companies, when added to the assets under management by our federal FDIC, Federal Reserve Chartered Banks, push those numbers into the several hundreds of billions of dollars. And so when I talk about our trust task force bill and talk about some of the minutia associated with what we do, I want you to understand that that minutia rolls into bigger things, and it rolls into a larger story that we're able to tell those looking at South Dakota to either bring a trust company to South Dakota and then employ good people as a result, or bring their trust to South Dakota, employing our South Dakota trust companies. So picking up where Director Aftal left off, talking about sections 9 through 16, again, these are technical cleanups that we've identified with our regulators, with our trust representatives, and with our practitioners to tweak inside of our trust bill and our trust legislation, our trust statutes, in order to make it clearer and more inviting to a look at South Dakota. I would point out for your attention section 15, a somewhat significant change in specifically authorizing arbitration provisions in our trust documents, and that helps distinguish South Dakota as one of the states that would specifically authorize arbitration provisions in trust documents. So I would mark that as significant. Sections 17 and 18, again, just clarifying what a trust protector can do. Section 18, I draw your attention to the fact that we've moved the threshold for terminating non-charitable trusts from the sum of $50,000 to $150,000. And while that may seem like a significant jump, I do want to emphasize that the court always has the final say in whether or not a trustee can terminate a trust, and if there are good reasons or other alternatives available to continue that trust, it can be done with another trustee. But we did want to provide flexibility with regard to that number because it hadn't been updated for quite some time. Section 19 and 20, another somewhat significant change in that we've added the term limited liability company to the definition of person. That follows what we've done on the corporate side. We're just bringing it inside of our trust code. But it also signals to families that if they choose to arrange their affairs in a limited liability company, then that limited liability company can take advantage of our domestic asset protection trust statutes. So that keeps us on par with what other states have done in this arena and continues the South Dakota story in being ranked as the number one asset planning jurisdiction in the country. Section 20 through 27 all relate to changes in SDCL Chapter 21-22, and that code chapter relates to court supervision of trusts. So when we have a situation where a trust that comes to South Dakota or is formed in South Dakota, situs in South Dakota, requires court supervision, the rules and regulations of Chapter 21-22 describe that process, describe that procedure. And the result of these sections is a product of a couple of years of work of several practitioners coming together with trust company representatives to refine that process, to modernize that process, and to give more guidance to the court and to the parties interested parties that want to avail themselves of the court supervision provisions in Chapter 21-22. I would be happy and will stand by to answer any questions. I do note that with Representative Mickelson's attention at our Trust Task Force meetings, that he would be my first choice of answering any highly technical questions regarding this bill and the trust company industry in general. So I defer to our dutiful chair in the event that there are any questions, and pick up any that he might not be able to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Getzinger. Any further proponents? Seeing none, any opponents on House Bill 1051? Okay, seeing none, I'll open up to questions by the committee. Any questions by members of the committee that Representative Mickelson can answer? Seeing none, thank you, sir. Very good. Open up to the committee discussion and or action at this point. Representative Mickelson.
I'll move approval.
Second. I'll take that as a motion for due pass by Representative Mickelson, seconded by Representative Solem. Comments on your motion? Representative Mickelson, go ahead.
I'd also like to recognize Terry Prendergast, who does yeoman's work on that committee, and I think probably has done, who's in the audience sitting next to Pat. Thank you.
Well, that makes me want to vote for it. Any further comments on the motion due pass? Well, I would encourage members of the committee to vote yes on the bill. Obviously, from the testimony, they're doing good work in expanding and building trust business in South Dakota. So with that, I'll have the secretary call the roll. Those in favor of the due pass motion, vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Bartling. Aye. Bolin.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Hawley.
Aye.
Langer.
Aye.
Mickelson.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
Stevens.
Aye.
Virchio.
Aye.
Wink.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Gosh.
Aye.
13 yay, 0 nay.
House Bill 1051 goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Mickelson, will you carry this on the floor?
Yes.
Very good. Takes us to our last item on the agenda. Excuse me. House Bill 1029. This is an act to revise certain requirements regarding high-performance building design and construction standards for newly constructed or renovated state-owned buildings. Proponent testimony at this time.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Christy Honeywell. I'm the state engineer in the Bureau of Administration. I am here today in support of House Bill 1029. The bill does a couple of different things. It updates our USGBC's United States Green Building Council's LEED standard from the current 2009 version, and allows us to use the newest version, which is version 4. Version 4 went into effect November 18th, 2013. If you would pass this bill, we would be able to use that July 1st of this year, and it is by far a much more stringent and energy-efficient rating system of LEED. It really focuses on building envelope. It also raises the bar on our energy efficiency and our mechanical and electrical equipment. I'm going to move a little bit down to Section 3, what Section 3 does of the bill. Right now, in the current state law, the minimum threshold for us to require a green building performance standard is 5,000 square feet and $500,000. That's the project size. What we would like to do is to bring that up to 10,000 square feet and $1 million. The reason we are doing that is because what we have found is when we build a small building or a small renovation, we simply cannot make bring those to the LEED standard. So, as a matter of fact, 26% of all of our LEED waivers have been in that project size. The last thing that I want to talk about is when we first brought this bill, it was kind of a cleanup bill, and we decided to delete two rating systems that were currently in statute, Green Globes, and also another ANSI comparable rating system. We did, however, speak to our industry partners this week. They did have some concerns that we were limiting ourselves about the different rating systems that we could use. And we have agreed to that. We agree with that. And so what we'd like to do is, Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment.
Yes. Paige, please pass the amendment out to members of the committee.
What this amendment does is it adds back in Green Globes, and it puts a new date on the Green Globes. It puts the newest rating system, the newest date, the newest version date, which is July 2013. It also allows us to use another comparable rating system.
Very good. Any additional testimony, Ms. Honeywell?
No, other than I would ask for your support on the amendment and the bill, and I will stand by for any questions.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1029.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, David Owen, South Dakota Chamber of Commerce and Industry, here to support the bill as amended and provide a brief historical note. I think it was about 2008 when this concept came up that we would require this energy efficient reference known as LEED, and some others in the business community, which I'm proud to be part of, was acting entirely like itself and had both of its heels dug in and didn't like it and couldn't figure out why we would put some reference in law and require these things when they might be able to be done out of choice and blah blah. The department in 2008, we got down to the issue of what standard do you pick, and so they put in a number of standards. The amendment keeps that because the department was right and have administered energy efficiency well, and they've used LEED, which has worked. Good thing to do. These are good changes to update. We appreciate the department listening to the concerns and keeping multiple options and routes, and we think it makes it a good bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Owen. Further proponent testimony, House Bill 1029. Okay, seeing none. Any opponent testimony on House Bill 1029?
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the committee, my name is Marcus Branstead. I'm here representing the American Chemistry Council. We are a national trade association representing over 150 companies involved in the business of chemistry. Whereas we were opposed to the original House Bill 1029, we are supportive of the amendment and do appreciate the administration working with industry to make this a better bill. And we look forward to working with the Bureau in the rules-making process. So I'll be brief. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Branstad. Further opponent testimony?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Larry Mann, representing the Black Hills Forest Resource Association. You know, sometimes you get put in an uncomfortable position of not knowing whether you're a proponent or an opponent. Just very briefly for our part, we participated back in 2008 out of a concern that the LEED process, the rating for timber, was done by an organization that is opposed to harvesting timber off national forests. And as a result of that, we couldn't get credit for timber used off national forest. And so that was our original concern. We also saw that Green Globes was an alternative that treated timber differently and treated some things differently and may have offered some additional options. And so the statute that's on the books today has worked since 2008, and we supported that. When the bill was initially introduced, it removed essentially the issues that we accomplished in 2008, and so that's why we opposed it. We worked very hard with Bureau of Administration and Christy Honeywell and Patrick Weber. And it's kind of fun when you get into these situations and you can accomplish something through genuine good faith negotiation. And I think that's what happened this week. And so they were sensitive to our concerns. We tried to be sensitive to theirs. We think the bill with the amendment will restore the bill to essentially what it was in 2008, but it gives the Bureau of Administration the opportunity to go to version 4, and that is essentially what they were seeking. So we would support, urge your support of the amendment and the passage of the bill. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Mann. Further opponent testimony? Seeing none, open up for questions by the committee. Any questions by the committee? Go ahead, Representative Mickelson.
I have a question for Ms. Honeywell. Good morning. Good morning. Over here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was behind the pillar,
yep,
so I didn't.
No,
I didn't,
problem.
I couldn't see who asked the question.
And I
apologize.
A lot of us are new. We weren't around in 2008.
Sure.
Would you give us a brief synopsis of why we have a compulsion to build to a green code in our state statutes?
Sure. Prior to 2008, we had in our contracts, we did build to certain ASHRAE standards, and ASHRAE is American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, Air Conditioning Engineers. Every 3 to 4 years, they come up with a new standard that tells us basically how we need, not standard, basically it is a way for us to design our buildings efficiently with our mechanical and electrical systems. Prior to 2008, that's what we did. What we were finding is that sometimes we had a difficult time putting what we thought were putting our money into energy efficiency versus other things. You may know that the first thing that goes when you're short of dollars are things that you can't see. And those ended up being our mechanical and electrical systems. So what we did is that we decided that the best option for us was to start building our buildings more energy efficiently, and these rating systems came about. The good thing about the rating systems are they force us, they require us to put the money where we should put the money instead of someplace else.
You have any follow-up? While you're thinking, any other questions by the committee? Representative Boland?
Representative Boland.
Thank you, and my question is directed to engineer here. I see in line 9 it says a silver standard rating. I assume if you have a silver standard rating, you also have a gold standard rating?
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman,
follow-up.
Could you kind of delineate maybe the differences and how much more stringent a gold standard would be to the silver, and then we'll go from there. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boland, the LEED rating system has 4 different rankings, certified, silver, gold, and platinum. Out of 110 points out of the system, 50, if you achieve 50 of those points of 110, you get silver. And off the bat, I can't remember what the gold is. I think it's 60 or 65. So what you end up doing is that to get gold, you have to take more energy points. There's 5 different areas that you can achieve points in. The first one is site selection. The second one is water efficiencies. The third one, which is the bulk of it, is energy efficiency. There's materials that we put into the buildings, and then there's also some innovation pieces. So just to achieve those additional points, it forces you to be more energy efficient and to gain those points. To achieve a gold, what we found is we typically would need to put in a geothermal system and some very high-tech mechanical electrical systems.
One brief follow-up. Thank you. So, in reality, there's 4 standards, and the bill in the code right now, we're at the second lowest. Would that be accurate?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any further questions by Representative Solem?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question for Ms. Honeywell. Is a LEED or an ANSI standard or GLOBE standard, do we need that to qualify for perhaps any type of federal funding that would assist us in these construction projects? I'm thinking state projects.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
No.
Okay. So we don't necessarily need the standards at all to qualify for federal dollars, correct?
Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, Representative.
Okay, thank you.
All right, further questions, Representative Mickelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to test a theory on you then. So we have a requirement in state law that we accept the low bids. So the low bids always wrote out of the contracts the energy efficient elements. So this is our way of getting around the low bid requirement by requiring everything be built to a certain energy efficient standard. Is that what's going on?
Mr. Chairman? No, Representative. The buildings are designed according to... We put the architect engineer puts together design according to make the building's energy efficiency. That's according to the design. Those are in the bid documents. Those are in the specifications. We put that out, and we do take the low bid if we do it a design bid build based on that.
You follow up?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
All right. Any further, Representative Hager?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, as I think about these LEED standards, the 3 and the 4 and GLOBE or anything else, I guess one question that comes to mind for me is what's our return on investment? So when we decide, hey, we want to meet this standard for energy efficiency, and I assume you go through a kind of a calculation analysis to determine, well, this is what it's going to cost. Here's the incremental cost to do this. Well, what's the payback? I mean, how long does it take to recover those dollars? I mean, it's great that we're not spending as much money on energy. I guess we could build, you know, we could build a solar capital building, but the payback might be, you know, 120 years in South Dakota.
Right.
And so I guess that's my question. Do you go through that sort of a process?
Mr. Chairman? We do. When we start the process, when we start to design according to the LEED Silver standard, our architects and engineers are required to run an energy model, and that tells us how many points, how much we would achieve on that. Typically, what we are seeing, our upfront cost to be certified is less than 2%. Unfortunately, I have some information, I have some data that will show you, say for major renovations, where before we did the standard, what we were paying for utility bills, and then after, what we were paying. As far as new buildings, it's a little bit more difficult because we don't have a starting base. Another thing that implementing these standards did for us is prior to 2008, a lot of our buildings were not individually metered. And through this process, when we build a new building, we put them on a separate meter. That gives us the ability now, over a course of a period of time, to see actually what we're saving long-term.
Follow-up? Any further questions by the committee? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Ms. Honeywell. Good job.
Thank you, committee.
Open up the committee discussion and our action. Representative Stevens?
Yes, I'd move Amendment 1029-CA.
Okay, motion is for Amendment 1029-CA, moved by Representative Stevens, seconded by Representative Solem. Comments on your motion?
I think that everyone's in agreement that these changes need to be made, and I'd ask that we approve it.
Any further comments on the motion to amend with 1029-CA? Seeing none, those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. Further committee discussion or action on 1029 as amended?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stevens.
I'd move due pass on 1029.
Second.
Comments on your motion?
I think the testimony is pretty clear that this is a good thing for us to do an update, and I'd ask for support.
All right. Further comments on 1029 as amended? Seeing none, those in favor of 1029 as amended will vote aye. Those opposed, no. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Spartan?
Aye.
Bolin?
Pass.
Hager?
Aye.
Holly?
Aye.
Rainer?
Aye.
Nicholson?
Aye.
Hunterman?
Aye.
Solem?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Virgio?
Aye.
Wink?
Aye.
Bolin?
No.
House Bill 1029 as amended goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. That's our final item. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Representative Mickelson, seconded by Solem. Those in favor of adjourning will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.